Make sure we're all officially here.
Yes, I'm starting the recording.
Great.
Okay. Roll call. I see Treasurer Reed's here. Senator Johnson.
Johnson here by phone and video.
Representative Nathanson.
I'm here on Teams.
Katie Kopa.
Here on Teams.
And Professor Dewey.
Here on Teams.
Thank you very much, Laura. So, team, we're here to receive an update based on the latest revenue forecast. And I'm going to say something editorial about that in a minute, but perhaps most significantly beyond the content of the meeting is the fact that we have a new debt management director. I think this is the first time we've met with Jacqueline Knight. So I want to officially welcome Jacqueline. We're very glad to have her as part of our team. I don't think it's I would be the right person to recite her entire impressive resume, but it's worth noting a really significant set of experiences on the private side in this space. That's really going to add to our capacity and our understanding. Of course, we all benefited from working with Laura Lockwood McCall for many years, but we're very glad that Jacqueline is stepping in and going to add significantly to our team. So, Jacqueline, welcome, and please feel free to fill in anything that I've left out. A big move all the way across the country, but I'm very glad you're here.
Thank you. I flew in a few weeks ago and went back, and Sunday I flew back in and I saw the flight pattern, and they showed me coming from Connecticut, New York, all the way across the Canadian border to almost the same spot on the West Coast. I thought that was pretty impressive in the flight pattern. I didn't notice that before, but I moved, pretty much latitudinally, is that the case? To the exact opposite of the country. But Oregon is not foreign to me. I have worked with the state and Oregon State Treasury since 2002. And so while many of you have not seen me on the banking teams, I know quite a few people, the attorneys, some of the folks in OSC have worked extensively with Laura Lockwood McCall, and I'm delighted to be a part of this team. And thank you for having me here.
Thank you. And we're going to put you right in the spotlight to continue in helping us understand the impact of the latest revenue forecast on our debt capacity. I want to say right off the top that I'm sure there are others, particularly Professor Dewey, who will add considerably to this context. But I think and for the benefit of those who are listening today, I think it's unlikely that we will make definitive declarations or decisions today, just because there is so much uncertainty associated with this forecast, what's going on in the world, and the fact that there is another revenue forecast just a few weeks hence. But it is appropriate for us, I think, to meet and consider this and set ourselves up for further consideration on the next forecast. So certainly all of you welcome. I'd invite you to comment on that as we hear it going forward. But for the benefit of those who might be tuning in, I expect that's where our conversation will probably go today. Anybody have any other introductory comments or observations? And then we can turn it to Jacqueline for the presentation. Commissioners, anything you want to add before we turn to Jacqueline? Okay, let's go ahead. Jacqueline, please.
All right, thank you. I'll be assisted with my team members, Laura Worth and Lee Helgerson, who's on the line. And so you should have received this material in your mail. Again, it's the update of the 2020 State Debt Capacity Report. This report would have been the revision to the 2019-21 biennium report and reflects the September economic and revenue forecast by the Office of Economic Analysis.
Are you able to see it?
Yes.
Yep, we can see it.
Next page. Once again, in June, as a result of the COVID-19, it was clear that our revenue forecast update and an update of this report was necessary. And the results were pretty dire. And now with the September forecast, we have some reason for optimism. And so the remainder of this document, we will compare the September forecast to the original forecast and show you the impact of the new revenue analysis on the general fund and lottery revenue debt capacity for the state. This next page, for the general fund revenues, there is cause to have optimism. In the first quarter of the fiscal year 2021, due in part to federal stimulus, corporate income tax returns, personal income tax collections that were delayed due to the extension of filings and federal stimulus, we had a better than expected result in the revenue forecast for the general fund. And the chart to the left shows you the general fund revenue forecast. We put four lines on there for good reason. The first line is a blue line, which showed the original CEDPAC report, and that was our expectation when we started this process in the biennium. The orange line just below that is a 2020 revenue forecast update that was completed in January. And in June, we had the gray line represent that forecast, which shows a marked decline in expectations for revenues. What's impressive is the yellow line, which shows the unanticipated spike in revenues, and that is actual. And then the forecast, the Office of Economic Analysis has indicated that the future forecast has conservative assumptions. And therefore, while we spiked in the early part of the current fiscal year, we expect to see modest growth over time and a decline from the spiked level. It is, as Treasurer Reed said, uncertain, these results, because we don't know the extent of stimulus and we don't know the full impact of ancillary actions that may be taken by corporations or other industries that are affected. So there may be some lag effect, but hopefully those are incorporated in our economic analysis. So this spike that we see in FY 2021 is really great for optimism, because that gave us a surplus and that allows us to achieve much of our objectives for the general fund. To the right side, we have the lottery revenue forecast and similar lines. The blue line representing the 2019 CEDPAC report, the orange line in 2020 had greater optimism at the start of the year. We all started out with great optimism, clearly. And the gray line shows the June report, the revenue forecast, and that showed a sharp, precipitous decline in revenue forecast. In September, that forecast revised those numbers and showed a more modest decline in the revenues. And therefore, even though it is indeed a decline, it is still room for optimism. So these are good results. And as we've heard, we're awaiting the December forecast, and we'll continue to review that for future updates.
Jacqueline, I'm going to just break in and say and ask if you're okay with us asking questions as we go forward. I should offer that up to other commission members if they have any.
Absolutely. That's fine.
So let us know, please, if you have questions as we go forward. I don't see any now, though, so please go ahead, Jacqueline.
Okay, so we can go to the next page. So here we will analyze the general fund capacity Laura Worth, who's worked, we have a spreadsheet, and Ms. Worth will discuss the spreadsheet and what we place in the assumptions associated with that spreadsheet.
How many times have you heard, whoops, my mute was on? So,
Treasurer Reed, yes. Can I ask a question?
Please.
I realized I don't think the answer is going to be on this inputs and assumptions slide. I'm sorry. On the previous slide, it occurred to me much of what you do, I'm not sure whether it's 100% of what you do, is based on our state Office of Economic Analysis, on our own economists' forecasts. Do you also have separate sources that you use, double or triple check some of those built-in assumptions and forecasts, or is this standard operating procedure that we use one set of numbers and we use those numbers adopted by our state economist?
I would say two things, and absolutely ask Jacqueline to weigh in too. It's important to remember that the Office of Economic Analysis, of course, includes a variety of inputs and a variety of perspectives, individuals and sources. And then I think we, Jacqueline and team, check that against other sources as well. But ultimately, I think you have to proceed from one source informed and checked against a number of others. But Jacqueline, please feel free to add in any details that I'm overlooking.
We do rely on the in-house forecast. It has been historically stable and reliable. At the same time, we make an assessment as to whether or not it is outlandish, if it doesn't stack up well to what other places or other cities are seeing or other states. With the state of Oregon, just a unique state, and having had experience with many states, Oregon, the personal income tax measures make sense from my perspective, because the people who were most affected by the COVID-19 crisis were frontline people, low wage earners, and the economic stimulus that was provided was really to keep folks employed. And so many of the big corporations or you find that high income earners have not been as affected. So you really have a tale of two economies going on. And so the impacts, even though, you know, there's clearly a shutdown for people who can work from home, they're working from home, their salaries have not been as impacted. The issue is whether or not the impact, the future impact of the COVID crisis will seep into those areas. And I expect from my assessment and review of other economic data that if we see any impact of that, we would see it in the 2021 year, starting in 2021. So we do sort of measure it against, we don't have another set of reports that specifically relevant to Oregon, but you can measure metrics like unemployment, which is down in Oregon below some of the national levels. So there are definitely factors to test it against. And we are definitely cautious. And this is uncharted territory. The future numbers, future impact on large corporations is yet to be seen.
So can I, add to that? I sense that there is some unhappiness about the way this played out this year. with respect to the forecast. Oh, good.
I'm just doing my due diligence.
I do think Oregon is a fairly unique position. And I, first of all, obviously we went into this, and I went into this with weaker expectations for the reality than occurred. And if you look around at a lot of states, they're actually in the opposite situation. Their outcomes are in fact worse than Oregon's. This has turned out to be a unique situation for a number of reasons. As one just mentioned by Jacqueline is, obviously the distinction between high end wage workers and where the impact fell. And another is we were trying to work in this new tax as far as the forecast goes concerned, and that, we were sort of running, or the state economist was running on, basically nothing there as well. So, this was an unusual cycle in a number of dimensions as far as, the actual outcomes here. So I would throw that in as far as what sort of has persisted in the last year and sort of what's forcing us to make another review. But I think many of us are surprised that the way this played out is much better for the forecast than anyone would have guessed, given what happened with unemployment rates and jobs.
Yep.
Yeah. I want to follow on. This is Betsy speaking.
Yep.
I want to follow on a line that Representative Nathanson opened up, and I'm going to turn from the very high-level professional analytics and ask about more anecdotal. Most of the legislature has over the last, since March, dealt with the failure of unemployment insurance and the concomitant misery that has caused a number of Oregonians. Loss of dwellings. I mean, I've got people that are calling me living in their house after not getting any unemployment relief for 20, living in their car, not getting any unemployment relief for 20 weeks. We've got an eviction cliff coming. I don't know how that's going to be dealt with. Right now, it's teed up to fall disproportionately hard on landlords. We've got other sort of systemic system failures, the number of businesses that have failed because of the disruption in their business plan, the curtailment of their ability to seat, for example, in restaurants, the number of covers that they need to fulfill their business plan. And I'm asking, how much does any of that anecdotal information factor into your reports? I see this as the glass way, way, way half empty. And the word optimism has been used several times since the meeting started. Based on the constituent interactions I'm having, I see no reason for optimism. And so if you could comment on the sort of on-the-ground scenarios that may affect the economy, I'd love to have that perspective.
Senator Johnson, let me start, and I'll turn to Jacqueline too. My comment is that you're giving voice to what I was sort of alluding to at the start, which is that I feel like there is the tale of two economies, as Jacqueline said. The numbers indicate one thing, but the uncertainty and all of those that you articulated and others cause me to think there's a disconnect here. So that's part of why I'm very cautious or reluctant to say we should make any proclamations, particularly when there's another forecast just a few weeks away. So, Jacqueline, please add to anything I've missed.
I do agree with you 100%. I mean, restaurateurs, people who are on the front line working in modest to menial jobs are affected enormously. There is also one bright side, though, that's kind of interesting in that labor class, is that construction is up significantly. We've also seen it in trucking. So while some parts of the economy has stalled completely, we have to really spend time looking forward, working on how to transition people into the areas that are booming. With people staying at home, the truckers are on the road all the time. So you can even see that in the highway forecast. With the car traffic down, the trucking traffic has made up for that. So So there's some aspects of the economies, even at the low to mid-tier work earnings end, that's actually working out very well. It's going to take a long time. I'm not an economist. I'm not going to pretend to be, but I am cautious when I look at these numbers, and I don't think it's time to celebrate yet. So I do think that there's a lot to look for, and when we start seeing the implications on the middle class, what's left of that, and the upper middle class, it's actually going to, if there is a negative effect, if this economy doesn't bounce back, it could be tremendous.
And Senator Johnson, I think you're asking good questions, but I also want to be sensitive to the fact that Jacqueline is an enormously capable person, but her particular expertise is in the bonding part, not as a you know, an economist. We have Dr. Dewey here too, but I also want to be sensitive to the time all of us have. So if unless you object, I'd like to keep us moving forward on the numbers too.
I don't object at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Only thing, Senator Johnson, you are, of course, free to call me if you have any questions, and Representative Nathanson, the same holds for you. So, you know, again, I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you. And I hope that no one interpreted my question. No one else was clever enough to figure out that there might be another reason I was asking the question. I truly meant it. Because I'm trying to figure out how the state treasurer's office accomplishes its work, whether it has other sources or relies on our official state economist's forecast. It was nothing more than that.
Perfectly fine, Representative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so in order to arrive at the debt capacity calculations, we basically use the revenue forecast that we receive, and it's a custom model and fairly rudimentary, but it serves our purpose. And Laura Worth will discuss the assumptions that we use for those modeling purposes.
Yes, so the reports based on our debt capacity models, and to understand the results of those models, it's important to understand the inputs and assumptions. So this report accounts for all debt issued and outstanding as of June 30, 2020. So that's an update from the June report. And it uses general fund forecast revenues contained in the September 2020 economic revenue forecast. Our calculations assume the issuance of $1,139.5 million in general fund backed debt, and that it's issued by the end of 2019-21 biennium. And as you all know, that amount includes the $946 million originally authorized by you all in the 2019 legislative session, House Bill 5005, and further amended by the 2022nd special legislative session with SB 5721. So our bond structuring assumptions have not changed and include a level debt service payments over a 20-year term, 4.5% long-term interest rate, and the target of 5% general fund revenues to support debt service, which is not set in stone, but it is the commission's long-established debt capacity constraint. Jacqueline?
Next slide. With this model, we're able to generate debt capacity in each of the next 8 years. As you can see at the top line, we have 2021 with $1.139 billion issued. With that issued, some of which was already issued previously in FY 2021, and the remaining 875 will be issued this year for the aggregate of $1.139 billion, we will have, our debt service will be 3.5% of total general fund revenues, and that's a respectable number as far as the rating agencies are concerned. For the ensuing fiscal years, 2022 to 29, we are looking at an aggregate, including this year's, of $7.303 billion. And that assumes we meet a capacity of 5%, which is our target capacity levels. We do not want to exceed those in the over the course of our projected time frame. But one of the things that you will notice is that if you look, say, at the FY22 number, our capacity is $679.8 million. And then in 2023, it's $236 million. So these numbers vary by years and vary significantly. In 2028, that capacity number is $2.014 billion, and that's because our pension bonds are fully amortized as of 2027. And so that increases our capacity enormously. There is strong capacity at the general fund level. It is, you know, not even on a year-to-year basis with the 5% target based on the revenue forecast. And if you recall, in the revenue forecast, it was conservative estimates going forward well below the original levels for 2020. So assuming the December forecast support that, we'll feel comfortable with these this analysis. Next page. Now, on this slide, we compare what you saw based on the December 2019 forecasts. In the 2019 forecast, we had additional available capacity of $315 million. And $6.3 billion for the remainder of the 8 years. And I believe that included the $946 million. So in the aggregate, we had over $7.5 billion in total capacity. Right now, with our $1.3 billion that we issued for the 2020, 1921 biennium, we're assuming no additional issuance as SB 5721 will have been fully satisfied. But from 2022 to 2029, we have an additional capacity of $6.163 billion. And if we average that capacity over those 8 years, we'll see that on a per biennium basis, we have bonding capacity of $1.54 billion. Now, I have to caveat that this $1.54 billion is if you issued, say, this amount in FY 2021 to 23, it would have a capacity limit in slightly in excess of 5.5%. If we go back to the prior slide, we'll see why. If you look at the FY 2020, you'll see that's just under billion, and that brings us to the 5% capacity. So if indeed, going back to slide six, we used an averaging approach over the 8 years and issued $1.54 billion, we'd be slightly above 5%. But at the end of the eight-year cycle, we will still be in the 5% overall capacity because in the other years, we wouldn't be issuing, you know, these very large amounts. This would be a steady state. And that you don't have to issue $1.5 billion. That's just the capacity and the average that's available. Next slide.
Mr. Treasurer.
Yes, please, Senator Johnson.
I just would like to put this thought in a parking lot someplace and we come back and visit it later. Sure. I noticed at the end of the session, the amount of pressure to want to exceed that 5% and exceed it by a pretty significant amount. And I think that's something that we ought to opine on at some point in the future.
I think you're right. And we can definitely come back to that. The notion of exceeding it is only plausible in my mind for the right sort of project and to a limited extent. It's not, in my mind, an unlimited ability to exceed it. But I appreciate you flagging that, and we can come back to that for sure.
And I want to say that the reason, the way we derive that number is that over the course of the 8-year projection, the capacity will not exceed 5%. So right. It's just averaging the numbers over the 8 years. And so 5% is our goal and our target, and that's our structuring constraint.
Great point, Jacqueline. It's not that we're abandoning 5% over the long run. It's just that it would exceed it temporarily in interim periods over that longer period.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. So we've summarized this before. The September forecast supports the issuance and financing of $1.139 billion of authorized projects under SB 5721, while remaining under the 5% general fund target. The future year capacity, $6.163 billion, also remains under the 5% target. Averaging approach, which we just discussed with the $1.54 billion on a biennium basis, it definitely puts you above in certain years, but over the course of the entire 8 years, you're still in the 5% target. So it's just food for thought as you plan and budget. It may give you some guidelines. You don't have to budget at that level. You might want to budget $200 million less or so. But we just show you what that translates to for informational purposes. Lottery debt capacity. So we also have a model that we've customized for the lottery. Now, the lottery has been very interesting because historically, the lottery in our state has been on the uptick. And so for the first time, at least that I've understand, we had a decline in lottery revenues. And so we've had to adjust the models to reflect that. And Laura, if you could just kind of go through what we've used here.
Again, this is based on a debt capacity model, our debt capacity model. And not much has changed. We did update the outstanding debt as of June 30th, the end of the fiscal year. Again, we're using the same information put out by the September 2020 lottery revenue forecast. And the bond structuring assumptions remain similar, or the same as before, with 20-year term, 4.5% long-term interest rate. And of course, our constraint for lottery is required in the lottery bond trust indenture, and it's to provide 4x debt service coverage, or debt service may not exceed 25% of net lottery revenues.
Next slide. Again, the similar capacity report. Now, I know this is not a huge amount of mana, but based on the September forecast, we estimate, our models project that there is 92.6 million of capacity with the revised lottery revenue forecast. Previously in May, with the forecasted dip, you would have been below the 4.0 times coverage, and therefore you would not be able to issue debt based on the master indenture covering the lottery bonds, because it has something called an additional bonds test, which means that to issue additional bonds, new bonds, you must meet certain criteria, which is that debt service, lottery revenues to debt service would be 4x. Or, you know, debt service as a percent, flip side is 25%. Right now, with the current forecast, we're at 4.2 times coverage, which give rise to about an extra $7 million per year in the current year, which permits us to do $92.6 million. In the ensuing years, 2022 to 29, we have an additional 1.7 plus billion that we can issue for a total of 1.8 billion. And all of those meet the debt service coverage ratio of 4.0 times and 25% of lottery revenues. Next page. Now, we've analyzed this or represented this a little differently from the general fund. Our December 2019 forecast, the planned issuance for the biennium was $303 million with additional capacity of $30 million, and capacity for the ensuing years was $2.2 billion. Now, using the September forecast, although we have authorized issuance in this biennium of $247 million, our revenue capacity allows us to issue $92 million. And for the future years, we have, for the total number of years, we have $1.8 billion. So based on the lottery forecast, we definitely have lost capacity, but there is still, a fair amount of issuance that can be done. So we had the reduction from the plans in 2019, but we still have 1.8 billion of capacity. On an average per biennium, our forecast suggests that we can issue 427 million between 2022 and 2029. And that's assuming we issue the $92 million in this biennium.
I want to just, this is Betsy again, plant a flag on that one. We have that level of capacity, but I would certainly question prudence.
Indeed, Senator, that's I think you're smart. That's very consistent with what I was trying to allude to as well. And what I might suggest is letting Jacqueline sort of finish out and then return to that question, because that is really what I'm looking for at the end is a sense of the commission here as we communicate this information to the legislature before the next forecast. So let's come back to that if you're all right with that. Jacqueline, let's go ahead, please.
Yes, next. Yeah, thank you. The significant drop in lottery revenues we mentioned just permits $92 million of its authorized $247 million of lottery revenue bonds in the spring of 2021. The reason for that is that there's a look forward and a look back test. The look back test looks at lottery revenues in the last 12 of the last 18 months. And the look forward test looks at projected unobligated lottery revenues in the 12 months, the current 12 months, and includes the future issuance of bonds, the current contemplated issue. So we have to meet those tests. I mentioned the $7.7 million of excess revenues in the forecast that permits us to issue the debt in FY 2021. One of the options that you have is that we can delay the issuance completely and extend, the legislature may extend the $247 million of total issuance to late 2021, say the second quarter of FY 2022, and complete the entire $247 million. So that's one issuance. No issuance in 2021, and do the entirety of the $247 million in the second quarter of FY 2022 with a legislative authorization. Another option that's on the table, with this low interest rate environment, the lottery bond program has some refunding opportunities that has been identified by our senior underwriters that would permit us to increase the capacity to issue lottery bonds by approximately 45 to 50 million, say to about 140 or so million of the capacity. With the refunding, we get debt service savings, which provide us additional capacity. So that's another option if you want to issue in spring of 2021, is to combine the new money and the refunding, assuming rates prevail, and we can exact savings from those refunding, which are currently rich in the savings. Lastly, we're expecting the December report imminently, and so we plan to evaluate these options again and monitor them and provide you with update to see if there are any possible improvements in the 2021 bonding capacity. And the remainder of the pages shows the authorized lottery revenue projects and the authorized general fund projects for your information. And this concludes the report of the Debt Management Division. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. What I'm hoping for, and I want to just throw the floor open to all of your reactions, is to get a sense of your feeling here. I want to submit a sort of cover letter to these numbers, and transmit to the legislature beyond Representative Nathanson and Senator Johnson here. That can be just my signature, so none of you have to own the comments, but I would not want to proceed without having a sense of how you all feel about that. And just to put it on the table, I think, as I sort of said at the start, that the most prudent thing for us is to say, this is interesting information, here it is, but we really want to see the December forecast, so named despite the fact that it will come out November 18th, will give us a chance to react to that. And I think Jacqueline and Laura did a nice job of laying out the numbers and the options for us. But I feel like we're close enough to having more information that it would be smart to get that before recommending any particular course of action. So with that, I'd love to hear what all of you think, please.
Well, I'll be bold enough to start. I take a very conservative approach to this. This lottery bond list that was put together of projects, some of these projects really seriously need additional scrutiny. Now, some were pulled off the list because other sources of funding were identified, but some of these need very serious scrubbing. One of them that jumps quickly to mind is under ODOT, the Sherwood Pedestrian Connection Improvements. The capital construction sub put in $2 million. That project was never vetted for design or construction, and I am told, but I do not know independently, that project could be as much as $20 million. So where's the rest of the money coming from, and why tie up $2 million of capacity in a project that may or may not go? The Wallowa Lake Dam Rehabilitation, I'm told by John Huffman from USDA, that USDA was very eager to participate in that project. $14 million is the total cost. I don't know why the state should bear that entire burden if our federal partners can participate with us. And so my point is that, A, we ought to be prudent. B, this list could probably profit from a scrub. But mostly I fall on the side of prudence. And if we open it up at some point in time, it needs to have some rigor and some discipline around it.
Thank you, Senator. And the world looks different than when you all considered this list before as well.
Yeah. Treasurer Reed, this is...
please.
Thank you. You know, using the state's bonding authority, we can create jobs, and we can be an economic stimulus, just as the federal government has provided economic stimulus. Baked into the revenue forecast was an assumption that the federal government would be including an additional stimulus, sending additional money to the states. That hasn't materialized yet. We are hopeful. We don't know how much it would be. We don't know when it's coming. But that was to address the pandemic. The western states of the United States, since that time, have experienced tremendous economic impact, adverse impact, and human crises because of the wildfires. And in fact, in Colorado, they're still occurring. So I'm looking at this. I agree with Senator Johnson that the list that had been reviewed and compiled before all of this stuff happened should be reviewed, because some of those projects aren't necessarily the best for long-term economic value. But I would like to use the state's bonding authority to create not only the short-term economic stimulus, those jobs that are required for the planning and the engineering work and the construction of infrastructure, for example. Some of those, whether it's general fund bonding or lottery fund, I'm hoping that we can review projects and find those that provide a short-term economic stimulus, but also those that provide then the lasting benefit because we invested in infrastructure. I believe that it is not imprudent to both use our bonding authority and also use it to help Oregonians to stay afloat for the coming year or two. And that says to me, we should continue to put money to work, not wait for a year or two till things are better. That's it. People need the help now and next year.
Thank you, Representative. That's helpful. I appreciate that.
So if I might chime in. So I guess we've got two separate issues. I mean, our committee is really about this, the amount of debt that we can issue, as opposed to the concerns of Senator Johnson and Representative Nathanson about how we issue that debt or how we use it. And I don't know if you in your letter can write up something to that effect or something it's prudent that, you know, we rethink what we were spending money on now, because the world post-pandemic is different than pre-pandemic. I think that's kind of where we're all going on this, right? Is that, you know, it'd be nice to be able to send a signal, a supportive signal to the legislature that says, you know, what we needed to do last year versus what looks like we need to do now are two different things. And I think that those are really important points to push. And then if you then could, in fact, go over the 5% limit on a temporary basis or even sustained basis, if you had some real, you know, unified goal you were working for. And I think that gets to your point earlier, Treasurer Reed, is that, you know, we're uncomfortable raising the limit just to spread butter across the state, so to speak. But we're, you know, we'd be more comfortable with it if it was, we need a real organized climate change plan to, you know, prevent another, you know, catastrophic type of fire events, right? And those sorts of things.
Right, right. That's very helpful. Thank you. Dr. Koba.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're talking about the revenue forecast that's going to come out next month. I'm not the economist. I would look to Professor Dewey for that, but we're expecting that there won't be much change in that forecast compared to the September forecast. I think we ought to expand thinking to not only looking at that November revenue forecast, but also the one that comes out early next year. There's a lot of things that potentially could happen between now and when the February revenue forecast comes out, and things like moratorium on rent evictions going away potentially, maybe a new stimulus package, maybe not. I am hesitant to move forward on any kind of recommendation about issuing debt, just because I'm concerned about the volatility right now, potential volatility of our revenue forecast. So I might be the most conservative one so far, just from the standpoint of I'm pretty nervous about what the revenue forecast could do next year, just because of so many unknowns. The other question I had, and I was just quickly pulling up the statute on the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission. I believe that we are advisory in nature, so I'm assuming that obviously the legislature can make whatever decision they want. Right. The legislature will be back in full session early next year. And I do think we need to make a strong recommendation, but recognizing that they're going to be the ones that need to act on issuing, on reviewing the projects, seeing if there are existing projects that they want to renew or if there are new projects to add to the list. And that is not going to happen early on in the legislative session. Typically, that doesn't happen. So I just think we need to be strongly worried about worded in terms of, yes, we have a revenue forecast coming out in November. It's probably not going to change much from the September forecast. And we really need to be looking at the forecast early next year before we make a strong recommendation one way or the other.
Appreciate that. Yeah, you make a good point that there are only two among us who will have a vote on those changes. And yes, I think that the nature of nodding to the future forecast, that if I gave too much impression that the December forecast is going to be definitive, I didn't mean to do that. It's just one more piece of information that we don't currently have. But you make a good point about the longer we go, the more information we will have. So that's very helpful to me. I think I have enough to construct a letter that I think will be consistent with what I'm hearing from all of you, and the numbers are the numbers here, and I'll do my best to write and sign something that reflects what I'm hearing here in nodding to striking the right balance about uncertainty and potential volatility, the nature of the world looking different than it did before, suggesting that the legislature be prudent but acknowledge the potential of contributing to economic activity in the short run and economic capacity in the long run. And I think we can come with something that works for all of that, and recognize that we'll likely be back together again when we see that December forecast, probably, as Director Kobe pointed out, looking to the next one for even more information. But I feel pretty good about where we are. I don't need to drag this out any further. We're coming up on the hour, and I know you guys have a lot of things to do, all of you. But is there anything else that we need to cover? Anybody, as other people were talking, anybody feel like they needed something else they wanted to add?
Just to welcome and thank your new staff.
She's great. We're really glad she's here. Thank you, Senator Johnson. I appreciate that. Very good, then. We will proceed as you all have suggested. Thank you for being part of this this conversation. I always feel better after getting the wisdom that you all provide, and we'll be back together again soon. I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you all very much, and wish you a good Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks.